Welcome to AltUniverse Top 40. My name is John McMullen. For the next hour, we will listen to some records, talk about chart positions, and make some good-hearted adjustments that time and taste demand. On today's installment, we will hear the biggest solo hit from a singer-songwriter that has moved on from making records and now writes TV and movie scores. One of his most famous is the theme from the TV show The Office. Later, for our little slice of heaven, we examine a recording that captured a fateful moment in 1951 when studio legend Sam Phillips engineered a recording by an intense blues singer that appeared to be sketching out the template for an embryonic form of music that had not even been named rock and roll yet. Then, we will play a track from the most successful home recording project ever, a song originally credited to a band called Mother's Milk. And finally, our Hall of Perfection track is a landmark recording whose meticulous producer used over 90 hours of analog tape in four separate recording studios to produce a 3.5-minute record. But first, just as we do every week, we start with a song that, at some point, was perched at number 40. Some of these were on the way up, and some were on the way down. Some hit number 40 for a one-week peak and then crashed. What kind of number 40 do we have for today? Well, we start with a band that we featured on the show several weeks ago. We pointed out that one of their signature singles from their 1978 self-titled debut album had peaked at number 4 in England, and we were surprised that the same song had only reached number 35 in the United States. By the following year, they ran into another chart issue. After scoring a top 15 hit, the second single from their second album received a huge amount of airplay on FM album stations, and the album shot up to number 3 on the Billboard album chart. So what was that chart issue? Let's listen first. From an album that sold over 4 million copies, those were The Cars, with the late Benjamin Orr singing lead on It's All I Can Do, a song written by Rick Ocasek. Even though this single peaked at number 41 on the Billboard Hot 100, it gets a number 40 slot because on Cashbox, it actually made it up to number 40 before it skidded down the charts.
Universe Top 40.
Number 20.
Talk about connections. At number 20, we have the resulting classic rock sound when the lead singer and drummer from the band Free joined forces with the lead guitarist of Mott the Hoople and the bass player from King Crimson to record using a mobile studio truck owned by the Rolling Stones, with a producer who had worked with The Who and an engineer who had recorded Jimi Hendrix. All of this for an album that was released on the custom label owned by Led Zeppelin. While this song was never released as a single, we believe that it would have, at the very least, made it up to number 20 if it had been. Here is Bad Company featuring Paul Rodgers singing lead on a song written by bandmate Mick Ralph's Simple Man.
I am just a simple man, working on the land. Oh, it ain't easy. I am just a simple man, working with my hands. Oh, believe.
Song that at the very least should have made it up to number 20. That was Bad Company and Simple Man.
This one went to 11.
My name is John McMullen, and this is Alt Universe Top 40. Now we are up to a song by a four-man British band that really peaked at number 11 on the Record World Singles Chart in the United States. At that same time, it was listed at number 8 in Cashbox and number 13 on the Billboard Hot 100. In Australia, both the single and the album that featured the song hit number 1.
Falling in love was the last thing I had on my mind. Holding you is a warmth that I thought I could never find.
Falling in love could be your mistake.
Isn't feel a warmth in my heart and my soul that I never knew. This love affair gives me strength that I need just to get me through.
Song that peaked at number 11 in Record World, Those Were the Babies and Isn't It Time?
Number 10.
After Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels had their run of successes on the charts, two of those Wheels broke away to form a new band called the Rockets. Soon, a former member of the Amboy Dukes joined them, and they moved from playing the People's Ballroom in Ann Arbor, Michigan, or the Rainbow Room in Detroit, to opening for Kiss and signing a record contract with RSO. For their 1979 self-titled album, they recorded a cover version of the Peter Green song, Oh Well. That song had peaked at number 2 on the British charts for Fleetwood Mac back in 1969, while only reaching number 55 in the United States. The cover by the Rockets did a little bit better than the original, making it up to number 30. However, based on rock radio airplay and the tight recording of the cover, we think this should have been a top 10 single in the United States. So, here are the Rockets at number 10 with Oh Well.
Can't help about the shape I'm in. I can't sing, I ain't pretty, and my legs are thin. Don't ask me what I think of you. I might not get the answer that you want me to. Understand, he said, stick by me, I'll be a guiding hand. Don't ask me what I think of you. I might not get the answer that you want me to.
With a song that should have, at the very least, made it up to the top 10, those were the Rockets and their version of Oh Well.
Number nine.
Here is a single that really peaked at number 9 on the Billboard Hot 100. It is by a solo act who was in numerous groups prior to striking out on his own. Some of his former bands include the Oat Hill Stump Straddlers, Western Union, the Red Roosters, Spirits Rebellious, Spirit, and JoJo Gunn. After leaving JoJo Gunn in 1975, this artist played piano on a Joe Walsh solo album during some recording sessions in Miami. Later, to repay the favor, Joe Walsh played lead guitar on this solo artist's biggest hit single, Thunder Island. Here at number 9 is Jay Ferguson. Thunder Island by Jay Ferguson, who, after one more hit single, started working as a soundtrack composer. His most recognizable scores are the theme from the TV show The Office, Pictures of You from The Terminator, and the work he is doing currently for NCIS Los Angeles.
Universe Top 40!
Auden and Grace should have reached number 8.
Now we are up to an alternative album track that is simultaneously modern and great. It is by the New York-based recording act called Ivy, fronted by vocalist Dominique Durand, who was originally from Paris and moved to New York to learn English. The other two members are Andy Chase and Adam Schlesinger, who are the guys responsible for co-producing, engineering, singing, and in the case of Schlesinger, writing the title song of the movie That Thing You Do. From their album on Network Records called In the Clear comes this haunting track that should have been released as a single. Produced by Steve Osborne, who also produced New Order, Happy Mondays, and Star Sailor, here is Ivy with Tess Don't Tell.
Don't tell.
with a song that is modern and great and should have reached number 8. That was Ivy with Tess Don't Tell.
Alt Universe Top 40.
Now we are up to our little slice of heaven at number 7, and it is a remarkable recording that started moving the feel of the blues a little toward what was to become rock and roll. Not surprisingly, the recording session that generated this fine new sound was produced by Sam Phillips back in 1951 at his now legendary Memphis Recording Service. So who was Sam Phillips recording? Well, we have already mentioned this musician. It was Sonny Boy Williamson II's one-time brother-in-law, Howlin' Wolf. Howlin' Wolf was born Chester Burnett on June 10, 1910, in White Station, Mississippi. He was actually named after President Chester Arthur. His parents divorced when he was approximately a year old. His mother allegedly kicked him out of her home, sending him to an uncle who treated him so badly that by the age of 13, he ran away. After walking barefoot for 85 miles, Chester finally found his father and experienced at least some degree of happiness. At the age of 20, Chester first began playing music with Charlie Patton in the Mississippi Delta, sometimes taking on the characteristics of Charlie Patton's showmanship. Within a few years, he moved across the river to Parkin, Arkansas, where he met Sonny Boy Williamson II, and, now known as Howlin' Wolf, began sitting in on Sonny Boy's radio show. He also became a regular performer on KWEM in West Memphis, Arkansas. After he relocated to West Memphis, talent scout Ike Turner took him to Sam Phillips, who produced and engineered his first real recordings. One of those early sessions resulted in the song How Many More Years, which was sent by Sam Phillips up to the Chess label in Chicago, where it was properly released and reached number 4 on the R&B survey. Over time, Howlin' Wolf moved to Chicago to be near the business end of Chess Records. He was financially able to make the move because he had done very well in Memphis. He actually had his own car and drove himself up from the Delta to Chicago, which was not common at the time. After he got married, his wife Lily took over managing his business. He performed continuously and even went back to school because he was tired of being functionally illiterate. After truly learning to read, he received his diploma and even took college courses in business and accounting. Howlin' Wolf overcame many obstacles on his way to success, but unfortunately, he never made peace with his mother. Once, when he traveled from Chicago to Mississippi to see her prior to her death, she rejected him for playing the devil's music. By the time he was in his late 50s, Howlin' Wolf's health began to decline. He suffered 2 heart attacks and injured his kidneys in a car wreck. During a kidney surgery in 1976, he experienced complications and he died on the operating table. With a song that never made the pop top 40, but started it all on the R&B chart, here is Chester Burnett, better known to the world by the name his grandfather gave him, Howlin' Wolf, and the song, How Many More Years?
How many more years have I got to let you dog me around? How many more years have I got to let you dog me around? Oh,
With our little slice of heaven at number 7, that was Howlin' Wolf with How Many More Years. Since our last broadcast, we have received messages from all around the world. Horst from Germany reports 45433 while listening to the 6070 kHz broadcast on a Texun PL880 with telescopic antenna. He tells us, "Thanks for the nice show with great oldies." Well, thank you for listening, Horst. Dennis from Missouri tells us that he hears the show loud and clear on Mixcloud using his Dell laptop with Beats headphones. He also says, "Keep up the good work." Thank you, Dennis. We will certainly try. Franz from Austria writes in to send greetings and says hello. He heard us on 6070 kHz and will catch older episodes on Mixcloud. He prefers to hear the show on shortwave radio, though. Thank you for your greetings, Franz. We hope that having the show available in both formats is convenient. Can you hear us? If you can, please send us reception reports, questions, or comments in an email to john@altuniversetop40.com. We would love to hear from you.
This is Alt Universe Top 40.
Number 6.
Now we are up to our bonus hit at number 6, awarded to an act that has achieved at least 6 Top 40 albums. Today's bonus hit comes from a double album that was released in 1972 by the Allman Brothers Band during a tumultuous period. The band had, several months before, finally experienced their true artistic and commercial breakthrough with the success of their live album recorded at the Fillmore East. According to manager Phil Walden, the band literally went from rags to riches during a 3 or 4 week period during the summer of 1971. At that point, the band began working on a new album at Criteria Studios in Miami. Before it was completed, though, tragedy intervened. On October 29, 1971, band leader Dwayne Allman was riding his Harley-Davidson motorcycle in his hometown of Macon, Georgia, when a flatbed truck stopped suddenly in front of him in an intersection. Dwayne swerved to avoid a collision, but was unsuccessful. Several hours later, he died from the injuries he had sustained. The band was understandably devastated, but after taking some time to honor Dwayne and also assess their collective future, they finished the album and decided to press on. One way that producer Tom Dowd allowed Dwayne to have as much presence on the album as possible was the inclusion of additional live tracks that were recorded prior to Dwayne's death. One of those live tracks was the Allman's rendition of a song written by last week's Little Slice of Heaven artist, Elmore James. It was then rewritten a few years later by the blues man we featured several installments back, Sonny Boy Williamson, too. Sometimes it truly seems that everything is connected in the world of music. Here at number 6 is one of the last performances ever given by Dwayne Allman with the Allman Brothers, One Way Out.
Oh,
bonus hit at number 6, those were the Allman Brothers with One Way Out.
Number 5.
My name is John McMullen, and you're listening to Alt Universe Top 40. Now we are up to number 5. John Kilzer certainly had an interesting journey through life. Tragically, John's journey ended just last week. He was born in Jackson, Tennessee, 62 years ago. He was a high school basketball star and became a scholarship athlete at the University of Memphis. As a player on a Division I team, he received free game tickets, which he traded to Teenie Hodges of the famed High Rhythm Section in exchange for guitar lessons. He ultimately earned a master's degree at the University of Memphis and, for a short time, became an English teacher. His ability with words led him to a songwriting deal with the Keith Sykes Publishing Company and ultimately a contract with Geffen Records. The first album he made for Geffen was produced by Keith Sykes and featured the ever-present Jack Holder on guitar and keyboards and background vocals by Roseanne Cash. He had a video on MTV and he toured with the Moody Blues, Little Feat, and the Tragically Hip. Later, he received his PhD from Middlesex University in London. Quite a number of years ago, Jack Holder introduced me to John Kilzer in the lobby of a recording studio in Memphis. John was extremely kind and complimentary of the music that he heard us tracking. He was not uppity in any way, although his level of success far exceeded mine, and he had by that time turned himself into a local phenomenon. He seemed to be genuinely happy that I had been given the opportunity to work with someone that he had worked closely with. I felt privileged then to have met him and will forever view John Kilzer as a classy person who positively impacted people all around. Some of those people he knew well, and some, like me, that he only met once. Here is the late Dr. John Kilzer with a song that I always thought should have been his first single on Geffen Records, Green, Yellow, and Red.
Yellow, yellow, red.
song that was later covered by Roseanne Cash. That was John Kilzer with Green, Yellow, and Red.
Alt Universe Top 40.
Number 4.
Now we are up to number 4, which usually means that it is time to play a single that charted significantly better in England than in the United States. Today, however, we are flipping things around and playing a legendary single that was included on one of the most successful American albums of all time, selling over 17 million copies as a debut album. This radio classic has been cited by some rock critics as having ushered in the era of corporate rock. In truth, it turns out that all but one of the recordings that comprised this amazing album were simply the most successful home studio experiments ever, and the musicians involved in its recording actually fooled a big corporation in order to maintain artistic control over the project. The writing of this particular song took a Massachusetts-based engineer for Polaroid almost 5 years to complete. He worked on the recording of the song in his basement during 1974 and 1975, with one friend providing vocals and another piecing together a drum part. Periodically, he sent demos of the song to various record labels under the band name Mother's Milk. After numerous rejections, Epic Records finally gave Mother's Milk a chance and put producer John Boylan in charge of coming up with a release-worthy album. What John Boylan discovered was that Mother's Milk already had a producer, the mad scientist songwriter that had worked for years in his basement. In order to allow the basement songs that were near completion to be finalized by Mother's Milk's leader, producer John Boylan flew the others in the band to Los Angeles to work on one track from that album that was written by the band's lead vocalist. When Epic Records needed a report from Boylan regarding the progress of the album, he sent the tapes from the sessions in L.A. without mentioning that most of the album was being completed in a Massachusetts basement. The bosses at Epic trusted their seasoned producer. They believed in his intuition. And it turns out that Epic's seasoned producer did make one change that may have been critical to the success of the band. And what was that contribution? It was a suggestion to the leader of Mother's Milk that he change the name of the band to Boston. With a single that failed to crack the top 20 in England, but charted at number 4 on the Cashbox Singles Chart, from an album that sold more than 17 million copies in the United States alone and barely moved 100,000 units in England, here is Boston with More Than a Feeling.
Yeah.
from one of the biggest selling albums of all time. That was Brad Delp on vocals, Sib Hashian on drums, and Tom Scholz on everything else with More Than a Feeling.
Making changes that time and taste demand. This is Alt Universe Top 40.
Number 3.
Now we are up to our number 3 from way downtown. And this week we are talking about downtown Zion, Illinois, home of the electro band Shoes. We mentioned this act a few weeks ago while discussing Star Club, the British band whose previous name was The Shoes. As for the Zion band, they preferred to be called Shoes with no the. Founding Shoes, brothers Jeff and John Murphy, along with friend Gary Klebe, got busy and utilized a teamwork approach to incorporate studio wizardry similar to the kind we just heard by Tom Scholz. Basically, after adding drummer Skip Meyer, they recorded their 1977 debut album by engineering themselves in Jeff Murphy's living room. After its success, they released the single Tomorrow Night on the now legendary Bomp label in 1978. By 1979, they were signed to Elektra and released an album that reached number 50 on the Billboard album chart. By the time their next album was released in 1980, Shoes had amassed a very respectable fan base, but they never truly exploded with the commercial breakthrough that they deserved. Here with our number 3 from way downtown are Zion, Illinois' hometown heroes, Shoes, with Girls of Today, a song that, despite what you think you might hear, has absolutely no keyboards in it. From way downtown, those were Shoes with Girls of Today.
Alt Universe Top 40.
Number 2.
Now we are up to number 2, which means that we believe that this single should have reached number 1. And it just so happens that this song really did peak at number 2. Not only did this record peak at number 2, but the act that released it followed up their initial number 1 breakthrough with 5 consecutive singles, 4 of which reached number 2 without hitting number 1. The other one hit number 3, by the way.
Amazingly, they later had two more number ones, a number two, a number three, and a number four, though not exactly in that order. So who was it that between 1970 and 1975 always seemed to have a song hovering in the top two? It was the Carpenters. And this particular number two was written by Bonnie Bramlett of Delaney and Bonnie and Leon Russell, one of the co-owners of that cool record label that we keep mentioning, Shelter Records. Prior to the Carpenters version, this song was recorded by Delaney and Bonnie, Joe Cocker, Cher, and Bette Midler. Richard Carpenter happened to hear Bette sing the song on television one night and immediately started working on a new arrangement for Karen to sing. Karen, though, was not excited at all about recording the song. And then she heard Richard's new arrangement. She said that when she heard that arrangement, she fell over, and instantly it became one of her favorite songs. Well, it's one of our favorites, too.
Long ago, and oh so far away, with you before the second show.
That should have reached number one. Those were the Carpenters with Superstar.
Number one.
Now we are up to our Hall of Perfection track at number one, and it is a song that has been called a pocket symphony by Beatles publicist Derek Taylor. It has been, in many articles, cited as the most revolutionary single in the history of pop and rock music. Over 90 hours of analog tape were used in the meticulous production of this masterpiece. Recording was spread over four Los Angeles recording studios, with the strengths of each studio being manipulated by the producer. I could literally spend an entire hour on everything I personally love about this record, from its harmony to its organ setting, but suffice it to say that every audible sound on this perfect single speaks for itself. Thankfully, this was an instance where creative brilliance and commercial success merged. By now, I am certain that everyone listening has figured out that I am gushing about Brian Wilson's stunning production, Good Vibrations.
I love the colorful clothes you wear, and the way the sunlight plays upon her hair. On the wind that lifts her perfume through the air.
I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations.
Softly smile, I know she must be kind. In her eyes, she goes with me to a blossom room.
I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me
Vibrations, our Hall of Perfection track by the Beach Boys and the Wrecking Crew, specifically the late Hal Blaine on drums. Incidentally, the late Hal Blaine also played drums on that number two song we just heard by the Carpenters, Superstar. (laughs) Well, that's all we have for today. Be sure and join us next week at this exact same time in the exact same place for another installment of Alt Universe Top 40. We would love to hear from you, so please visit our website at www.altuniversetop40.com. Those are all lowercase letters, and 40 is a number. Or you can email me at john@altuniversetop40.com. Again, all lowercase letters, and 40 is still a number. Or go to our Facebook page and like our Alt Universe Top 40 Facebook page. You can also hear each episode the following Friday after its original Saturday broadcast on Mixcloud. So until next time, keep making those positive changes that time and taste demand, and keep on smiling through the static.